morning, good morning, good morning. It is a getaway Friday morning, Friday, November 24th, 2017, and we are live 15 minutes past 11 o'clock here for your day after Thanksgiving, busiest shopping day of the year. Maybe you're listening in your car as you go from store to store to store. Hope you had a very happy and healthy Thanksgiving holiday. Today, we are back here and joined by one of our frequent and favorite guests. She was a panelist on the long-running television series The McLaughlin Group. She was a reporter for Newsweek and currently works for the Daily Beast to catch us up on everything going on in Washington, D.C., and the political world. One of my favorite guests, Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, how are you?
I'm very well. I hope you are too.
Yeah. How was
Thanksgiving? And all your listeners. Okay.
Yeah. How was Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was very nice. I'm actually in Western Massachusetts, Belchertown, where I have a son who lives here, and so spent Thanksgiving with him and his family.
Oh, very nice. Good to hear. Eleanor, I want to get into this story in Alabama. Fill us in. For those of us who don't live there, what exactly is going on down there?
Well, there's a special election on December 12th to fill the seat that was occupied by Mr. Sessions, who is now the Attorney General. And the Republican candidate is Roy Moore, who was twice elected as a judge in the state and was twice removed from that spot because of his refusal to go along with some of the laws of the land. And he had erected a monument to the Ten Commandments in the courtroom in one instance, and in the second instance, he didn't want to abide by the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage. So he's a controversial figure to start with, and in recent weeks, it's come out that he has a history of, how shall I put it, improper behavior with women much younger than he, and in one instance, a 14-year-old girl when he was 32 years of age. Most of the Republican leaders in Washington have disavowed him. The state Republican Party is sticking with him. And his opponent is Democrat Doug Jones, who is a former U.S. attorney. He's a native Alabaman. He's a Second Amendment advocate. He owns guns. He shoots. And he's hardly what you would characterize as a liberal. And the Birmingham newspaper called him a moderate Democrat. And he was a U.S. attorney and the lead prosecutor in bringing to justice two of the bombers who bombed the Birmingham church in 1963 that killed four little girls. So he's running a principled campaign, and the polls now show that they are running about even, the Republican and the Democrat, which is unusual since Alabama gave President Trump the biggest margin of victory than any candidate had ever received in Alabama. So it should be an easy win for a Republican candidate, but it's now a very competitive race. And while the president has not endorsed Roy Moore, he's come very close to it, saying we can't afford what he calls a liberal in that seat. And it's clear where his sentiments lay. So race, or the outcome of this race, is going to be seen as passing judgment on a lot of people and a lot of positions that the Republican Party has taken of late. And Republicans in Washington are very nervous that if Roy Moore should win, whether they would want to keep him in Congress, and it's likely that an ethics investigation would be launched immediately. And the coverage of this dilemma for Republicans has really dominated the news now for the last couple of weeks.
Eleanor, what exactly was the relationship with the 14-year-old girl? What did he do that we know?
He was a district attorney at the time, and he was outside the courthouse, and a mother and her daughter were there, and he engaged them in conversation, and the mother was there to appear in a custody battle, and he volunteered to watch the daughter outside the court while the mother went in, and the daughter was 14 at the time. He got her phone number, and he then followed up, picked her up on several occasions, took her to a cabin that he had in the woods, and she has provided, along with her mother corroborating her story, her version of what happened, which suggested inappropriate touching, I guess is how I could best describe it. And after that came several other women who stepped forward to say they were teenagers when Roy Moore was this young attorney general. And one woman had a very tearful press conference in the company of Gloria Allred, who does represent a number of women in these kinds of cases. And a woman who testified was a 16-year-old working after school as a waitress, and he offered to drive her home one night, and she alleges that he pulled the car over and groped her. And while he denies all the variety of allegations, and I think it's up to 8 or 9 women now, he did say at one point that he never dated any teenager whose permission he didn't get from the mother. So kind of in his own way verifying these stories. But the president has said he's denying them, and so that's enough for President Trump. And none of these instances are, you know, legal or actionable at this point. So we're talking now about really, you know, moral judgments about his behavior, and whether the politics that he represents is, you know, so important to some people in Alabama that they will vote for him regardless of whatever moral improprieties he may have committed.
You know, I guess there are people listening out there who maybe would understand why the president and the Republicans in Alabama do not want to lose this seat. But why don't they force him to step down and get a write-in candidate? It would seem in Alabama that the Republicans are so overwhelmingly, that Alabama is so overwhelmingly Republican that a write-in candidate could win.
I don't know that there's a mechanism to force him down. If he doesn't want to step out of the race, I don't think anybody can make him. You know, you can deny him money, which the Republican Senatorial Committee has done, but, you know, that doesn't seem to matter that much when the ideology involved is so strong. And the write-in votes, I'm sure people have started voting, probably, you know, they may have started already. I don't know what the rules are in Alabama. But the Republicans are nervous that any kind of write-in effort would split the vote, especially if Roy Moore doesn't get out of the race, and that would hand the seat to the Democrat. And they're anxious to get their tax reform proposal through the Senate before the end of this year. And if they lose even one seat, they don't have very little margin as it is, because there are so many controversial aspects to the Senate bill that, you know, losing the Roy Moore seat to a Democrat could doom the tax reform plan. But then you have a lot of other Republicans are saying, okay, you know, say we keep Roy Moore, you know, at what cost? And the consequences for 2018 in the midterm elections could be really disastrous for the party, because every Republican running will be asked what his or her position is more, and if they don't disavow him, that comes at a cost. If they do disavow him, then they say, well, what kind of a party is this that allows a person like this to still be, to still hold office without any consequence? And so it's a bad situation all around, I think, for the Republicans. They're really kind of stuck on this one.
Well, what I'm confused about, the president can back or not back who he wants to. The state party can do the same. But the people in Alabama will make this decision. How is it possible, knowing what he has done, or the allegations, are there just that many Alabamians who just dislike Democrats?
Well, I think they also feel that he has been elected twice statewide. None of this came up before. It's coming up instead 40 days before an election. So I think if you want to believe in Roy Moore, you're going to say there's dirty tricks involved here. And the pervasive attitude of a lot of people on the right is that, you know, today's media exaggerates things, favors, you know, Democrats. Media is doing a hit job on their guy because they don't like his position. So I think if you really want to believe in Roy Moore, you can willfully put your, you know, head in the sand on these allegations and say, I don't believe them. And Roy Moore is down there with his wife by his side saying this is all made up. Problem is, if you read any of these accounts, they certainly have the ring of truth. And you had Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, say, you know, I believe the women, which is kind of a watershed moment in the way these kinds of allegations are treated, because in the past, the burden of proof was always on the woman, and it was great skepticism when women came forward, you know, with charges of harassment, especially if they came forward many years later. And we've learned a lot about how the victims of sexual harassment, you know, suffer and why they don't come forward. And so it's perfectly understandable that these stories didn't surface until now. But again, if you're on the other side and you've got an R on your shirt, you don't want to give up that Senate seat for, you know, charges that you think may be baseless. And even if they're not, why should they, you know, come up this late? There's got to be politics behind it. So I think people can rationalize all kinds of behavior, and I think rationalized voting for Moore won't be that hard for some. Although I have noticed that Republican women in Alabama are beginning to speak out, and you can see the impact on the polls. I mean, I think at the end that the voters of Alabama, led by the Republican women, are going to defeat this person at the ballot box, which is where the best punishment should be dealt out.
If the Democrat does win in Alabama in 20 days, is Trump's and the Congress's plan for his first term pretty well dead? What they want to do if there's another Democrat in the Senate?
It may be dead with or without Doug Jones. I mean, it's when you start examining the aspects of the plan, it's hard to see how they don't have more defections. I mean, you have some members who say they would not vote for something that blows up the deficit to this extent, and I would put Bob Corker from Tennessee in that category. You have Susan Collins saying she would not vote for something that removes the mandate on Obamacare. So I think they would lose her if they keep that in, although they've been saying maybe they will take that out, but then they've got to find more billions elsewhere to plug up that hole. And then you've got Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who said that he wouldn't vote for this plan. I don't even remember what his reasons were. So it doesn't take many. They can lose 52 seats. They can lose two, and the vice president can come in and break the tie. And if Doug Jones comes, in all likelihood, he would vote with the Democrats. So then they could only lose one person. And would that be Ron Johnson? Would it be Susan Collins? So I think it's very tricky already. But on the other side of that is this, you know, conviction among Republicans that they're doomed next year in the special election. They're going to lose their majority in the House. They might even lose their majority in the Senate if they don't have something to show for their unified government. And the default position is tax cuts. But when you start examining these tax cuts, they don't do anything for middle class and the people that Donald Trump claimed that he was elected to help. The corporate tax cuts, which nobody who's not a member of a corporation or a CEO is clamoring for, and they're actually using the phrase trickle-down economics, which I thought was discredited years ago, you know, that if the corporations are doing well, it will trickle down to everyone else. I don't think people believe that. So it's not a popular plan already. So, again, I think they're in another, you know, lose-lose position. If they don't get the plan, they're damaged. If they do get it, it's not a plan that's positive for middle class, although the middle class tax might not be felt until after the midterms. I mean, it takes a long time for these policy changes to wind their way through the IRS.
Last year's election, 2016, was a Republican windfall. They had the presidency, they had the House, they had the Senate. What happened that nothing got done?
Because the Republican Party is many different parties, and the only thing that seems to unify them is their hatred of Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump, although he's supposed to be this, you know, master dealer wheeler, in business, his reputation wasn't even that good. A lot of bankruptcies, bills he didn't pay, failed enterprises, but he certainly, you know, lived pie on the hog, so he's still in the business world. But politics and democratic government is very different, and he really has not done the spade work to try to, you know, put together the coalitions that he needed. If he'd come in immediately and played on his what was different about him, this ability that he wasn't anchored in one party, in the Republican Party, if he came in and really made a play for Democrats and did, you know, infrastructure spending coupled with a tax plan, and if they'd work seriously from day one, that he might be in a very different place. But he's run his presidency directed entirely towards the base that elected him, and that's given us these hard right positions on immigration and trade and. There's a booming stock market, and unemployment is low, but I think we were headed in that direction under Barack Obama. I don't know that Donald Trump necessarily deserves credit for that. Meanwhile, you know, he hasn't gotten his wall built either, and he doesn't have any legislative achievements, but he's done a lot of, I think, you know, damage in various areas that feeds into what his base wants, and that having to do with immigration, the environment, and social cultural issues as well, having to do with guns, you know, denying the Dreamers an extension of their stay in the country. So he has delivered on a variety of fronts for the base of people that elected him, but he's done nothing to expand that base, and his approval rating in the last Gallup poll was 36%. It's been remarkably steady. He's never over 40, mostly at 39, and he's never fallen below 35. And that's the solid base behind him. But it's hard to see how he expands that base. And then, I mean, it looks like he's headed for disastrous midterms when the party in power typically loses seats. I mean, Barack Obama lost, Democrats lost 63 seats in the House 2 years into Obama's term. And during the Clinton years, the Democrats lost 54 seats 2 years into his term. In both those instances, the House flipped from Republican, from Democrat to Republican. So it looks like the same kind of change could be dealt to Trump and the Republicans.
To be fair, I want to flip over to the other side of the aisle here, the Democratic side of the Senate, because this is fresh out this morning, and I'm going to read this from the Los Angeles Times. Senator Al Franken has apologized again for alleged inappropriate conduct as two more women emerge to accuse him of groping. The Democrat from Minnesota said he was attempting to regain trust of his constituency, even as some colleagues called for his resignation. Following allegations that broke last week involving Franken inappropriately touching two women, another two women told the Huffington Post that the senator displayed similar behavior with them. The latest two women are not identified. Franken has already apologized, saying that no offense was intended or that he did not recall the incidents in question. Franken said he was a warm person that may have been too effusive in meetings with women. He said he had met tens of thousands of people and taken thousands of photographs, often in crowded and chaotic situations. Eleanor, this just keeps piling up. What do you see for Al Franken?
Well, on the other side, he's had numerous women who've worked for him in the Senate and also at Saturday Night Live who worked with him, who attested to his character. There'll be an ethics investigation launched in the Senate, which he requested, and they immediately acceded to. He's up for re-election in 2020, and I think it's up to the voters in Minnesota to decide if this is an occurrence that they think indicates a basic flaw in his character, and that they don't want to return him to the Senate. I do not see him stepping down, and I do not see the Senate, forcing his expulsion unless that's the result of the ethics investigation. And I kind of doubt that that will be the result. To me, it's almost too convenient to say, well, you know, Roy Moore is accused of this, and then on the other side we have Al Franken. You know, there are differences, and not all sexual harassment is the same. It's all wrong, but it's not all the same. And I think Franken's response has been far different from Roy Moore's. So Roy Moore's fate is now with the voters in Alabama, and as it should be. And if they do decide to send him to the Senate, then it will be in the hands of the Ethics Committee, as it should be, to deal with him how they wish. So there are mechanisms in place to handle this kind of behavior. And I mean, let's face it, it's not all that the behavior that Al Franken is being accused of. I don't think the behavior Roy Moore is being accused of is common in Washington. But stepping over the line and behaving improperly with women is, we've seen a lot of that in Washington over the years, and I suspect more of that will be coming out. And I just hope that the mechanisms we have in place have the maturity to, look at each case and decide each case on its merits, and then then it's up to the voters.
I want to talk about Arizona for a second, because Arizona in conjunction to the Senate is very interesting. Senator Flake, a Republican, is not running for re-election, and Senator McCain, obviously we know, is battling this horrible brain cancer and had an appearance on The View, which his daughter is on now, Meghan McCain, a few weeks ago, and didn't look well. How could you? She was married over the week, last week, I guess. Is Arizona conservative, or are they starting to become liberal?
Oh, I think both Jeff Flake and John McCain would describe themselves as conservative. And I think, I don't think Arizona is becoming liberal, although one of the people I think who have announced for Senate for to run for Jeff Flake's seat is Kristen Sinema. She's a member of Congress. And she's gotten rave reviews for how she's handled herself in office and the issues she's pushed. And I think she's proudly not sure. Maybe she calls herself bisexual. I'm not really quite sure, and I'm not even sure that it matters. But I guess you would describe her as a liberal. And so I think a liberal Democrat probably has a chance in Arizona, and maybe I wouldn't have said that in the last cycle. But I don't necessarily think that the state itself is trending one way or the other. I think people are looking for leaders who represent them and who have the courage to stand out. And Jeff Flake said that he wasn't running again because he couldn't run kind of race in the primaries that he would be comfortable with. He felt like to win in a Republican primary in Arizona that you had basically adopt Donald Trump and his positions and his attitudes. And Jeff Flake said he couldn't do that, but a statewide election is very different from a Republican primary. And I think candidates who are looking to run, often the major hurdle is getting through the primary, where they're forced, if you're a Democrat, maybe you're forced too far to the left, and if you're a Republican, you're forced too far to the right, and then you're not competitive statewide. You know, finding that balance, is hard for anyone, and Trump has made it harder with Steve Bannon, his former strategic advisor, basically putting up candidates the far right in an attempt to destroy the Republican Party. It seems to me that's his goal even more than going after Democrats, is to purge the swamp of these establishment Republicans. Mitch McConnell has taken on, he's become the person everybody's supposed to hate on the Republican side, and that's what's happened in Alabama. Roy Moore is running against Mitch McConnell and the Republican establishment almost more than he is running against any Democrat.
When it comes to John McCain, it's an interesting story because obviously the House has been willing to send things to the Senate. And the times they have done that, at least with health care, John McCain has been the stopper on that. Do you believe that is... give me the percentages here. How much of that is John McCain's true believing in what he believes in? And how much anger do you think there is at President Trump?
When John McCain ran in 2004, he ran as, or was it 2000, I guess, he ran as a maverick. And I think that's what he genuinely is. And I think in every instance where he has come out in opposition to Trump-backed legislation, he's had certainly a policy leg to stand on. It wasn't a pure vote of vindictiveness, but you know, John McCain wouldn't be John McCain if he didn't feel some anger at the man who ridiculed him for getting captured during Vietnam when Donald Trump, you know, didn't serve because he had flat feet or whatever. And Donald Trump has taken various shots at McCain, and McCain has returned them. But I think each one of the votes that McCain has cast, you can't say it's purely because he has it in for Donald Trump. Each vote, I think, was carefully considered. And when he delivered a very moving speech on the Senate floor, before he cast the deciding vote against the health care bill that everybody hated, he talked about the Senate that he loved that doesn't exist anymore, where you had debate and you had what's called regular order and you had committee hearings. And I think he feels anger at Trump about that as well, and at the Republican leadership about that, as well as any, you know, personal slights he may have suffered.
I want to come to Ohio here for a second. Our governor, Governor Kasich, his term is up next year. He cannot run again. He will leave office in January of 2019. If he wants to run for president, he's going to have to start by January of 2019. Do you think that he will run? And if President Trump is still there, how does he do it?
I think that John Kasich thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. And the day after the election, he was going to announce that he was going to oppose her in 4 years. When Trump won, I think John Kasich figured his political career was over. I think his first year in office, and probably just a few weeks in, maybe a few months in, I think Kasich and everybody else saw an opportunity for a primary challenge to this president. It happened before. Jimmy Carter was challenged by Ted Kennedy. George H.W. Bush was challenged by Buchanan. In each of those instances, the incumbent sitting president lost. A primary challenge is generally thought to weaken the president in power. And this president, it seems to me, he's inviting primary challenge from not only John Kasich, there could be others. So, yes, Kasich is not... he's not ready to walk away from the political scene. He's still very much involved, very passionate about his opposition to Trump, and passionate about his own beliefs that he would know how to remake our politics in a way that would bridge the differences between the two parties.
Interestingly enough, when our governor, who is Republican, leaves office next year, our Republican primary next year, we have our Attorney General, our Secretary of State, and our Lieutenant Governor all running in the Republican primary. The Democrats have some people, but the name that's on the screen right now is Jerry Springer, who obviously would run as a Democrat, who seems to not want to say no. We're getting awful close. Do you think Jerry Springer would run, and do you think he could win?
Well, I'm tempted to say kind of flippantly, in the age of Access Hollywood, of course Jerry Springer can run. I mean, when you think of he has his television past, it's a little different. Jerry Springer show, people would almost come to blow over their differences. It's a little different from The Apprentice, I guess. And Jerry Springer has had his own sort of almost embarrassing episodes having to do with public or virtues as perceived by the public. But you just cited a powerhouse on the Republican side, and on the other side Jerry Springer. He's plenty smart. He'd probably do a good job, but in terms of branding, I don't think necessarily he's the best brand for the Democrats. And so I think the problem in Ohio for Democrats is much more basic and what's happened to them. And I think Tim Ryan and Sherry Boutros are two people, members of the House, who who understand where the Democratic Party has failed in Ohio. And so there's a lot of rebuilding to be done. And I don't know that necessarily that they'd put Jerry Springer at the top of their list.
You know, Eleanor, and this is just my guess, but I think it will happen because I don't think, and I don't want to speak for them, but I think you have it's going to be a bloodbath on the Republican side in the primary. You have the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, and the secretary of state. That's going to be a knockdown, mm-hmm. drag-out. Now, none of them really agree with our current governor on much. So one thing you would have with Jerry Springer that they don't have with any of the candidates they're running now, he certainly has probably 99% name recognition with people in Ohio, probably more than any of the Republicans running. The Democratic mm-hmm. Party in Ohio is in disarray, and even if it didn't work, it would certainly, I think they would have a chance. I honestly don't think any of the other people they're running have a chance against those three.
Well, it's interesting, yes. Well, when you talk about the Republican primary being a bloodbath, I mean, would one of them be carrying the Trump agenda and one of them mainstream? I mean, would it reflect the differences in the party?
Well,
or would it all be a kind of personal battle of their particular personalities?
Well, the interesting thing is I had the lieutenant governor on a couple weeks ago, and she said she didn't agree with Governor Kasich on immigration, and she didn't agree with the Attorney General on suing the opioid companies. And I don't think that the Attorney General agrees with the governor on the drug epidemic, which were number one in opioid problems here in Ohio.
Wow.
And so I think it's a mess over on the... And I don't know that the governor would back any of them if he wants to run for president, because they disagree so strongly with him. So I think the one thing Jerry Springer would do is, if you have a ramshackled Democratic Party here, he would give you a lot of name recognition, and if they beat themselves to death in that primary, that could help.
Well, Springer is certainly a good debater. And, you know, the opioid crisis, I watched a focus group that Peter Hart, the veteran Democratic pollster, held in Wilmington, North Carolina recently, and almost half of it was devoted to the opioid crisis. It turns out Wilmington is a community that has given rise to a lot of rehabilitation clinics, and then when people come and go through the treatment, it doesn't always succeed. They relapse and they stay there, and the community is very, very focused on health care and Obamacare, which does cover drug abuse treatment. And people are very fearful that they're going to lose their coverage for opioid treatment. And there was one man in this focus group who described himself as a handyman, and he said he had lost 8 friends to opioid overdoses, mainly heroin, in the last 6 months. I mean, it's jaw-dropping what's going on out there. And, you know, I don't see how anybody can win an election if they can't grasp how desperate people are.
Well,
and if they can't at least seem to offer some sort of a way forward.
And I think that's the Democrats opening to say, under Republicans, look where we've gone. And also, Jesse Ventura winning in Minnesota years ago, you know, I think, boy, Jerry Springer would certainly, a national figure, would draw huge crowds in Ohio politics. And I certainly think if he was in, the national media mm-hmm. would cover this Ohio race, which means people mm-hmm. in Ohio who have CNN and Fox News and all that would hear a lot about the Ohio race. I just think they're trying to convince him, I think, is what is happening.
Two questions. One, what has he been doing in recent years? And then two, he does seem to represent a trend in our politics, the blending of sort of entertainment and politics. I mean, Trump, whether you love him or hate him, he's dominated our political culture. And, you know, ordinary politicians now feel, you know, great pressure to be, you know, more dynamic, you know, more charismatic, more interesting. And, you know, Springer certainly would fall in that category.
Well, the thing of it is, he's still doing his show, which he could certainly leave in September, okay. Which is why I think he could leave the following September, so he'd probably tape them. I'm sure he can get out of that. But the issue is I think that, like I say, the Democratic Party is ramshackled in Ohio after the last gubernatorial election, and he did come through here campaigning for President Obama. So people know him as a political figure here, and he was mayor in Cincinnati. So
right, and yeah, and he was a good mayor, as I recall.
Yeah, popular mayor. So that's interesting. In the last 4 minutes, Eleanor, I want to bring up Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton keeps saying every time she's asked, of course she's not going to run again, but she says, "I'm not willing." I want to say it how she says it. I haven't come to the place where I can accept the results yet until the Russian investigation is over. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I Donna Brazile recently was on Chris Matthews' show, Hardball, and she said, you know, I don't think this was a legitimate election. And, you know, I Hillary Clinton probably is wishing that Robert Mueller will come out and say this was so compromised that, you know, I have to say this I have trouble seeing this election as legitimate or something to that effect. But you know, our system is such that we are now, you know, deep into this presidency. They're not going to overturn the election if he is found guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors, and it's a political judgment that the House of Representatives would have to make. You know, that's the mechanism to remove him from office, or through the, I guess it's the 23rd Amendment, or is it the 25th?
I think 25th.
The one that says if the 25th, if the Vice President and a majority of the Cabinet say that he's unfit. I mean, those are the mechanisms that we have. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, I think all of the investigation into the dealings with the Russians makes her feel better about losing, that it wasn't all on her, and the fact that she wasn't charismatic enough or that she didn't campaign enough in the three states that decided the election, that there were other causes. So it probably helps her, you know, sleep better at night and not feel the whole thing on her shoulder. But it's not going to change anything.
We have about 90 seconds left, and I just wanted to throw this out at you, Eleanor. The shocking, I mean, we've heard all these allegations of men and women, but boy, the most shocking, I think, came this past week with Charlie Rose. What'd you make of that?
Well, I, like a lot of people, you know, saw him as this, the voice of gravitas, and it's disheartening to realize that he had this you know, power gig going on for decades, and that he exploited his popularity, you know, with young and vulnerable women seeking to get ahead with their jobs. His career is over, and it's a loss for him. It's a loss for all of us, because he did a good job, but he's gone and should be gone.
And his female producer used to tell people, that's just Charlie being Charlie.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Right. And that sounds so wrong in today's context, but that was not that unusual a response back in the day. But I'm sure she's really hurting and trying to come to terms with. I mean, she as she has said, she failed all these women. She failed herself, too. Yeah.
Eleanor? Yeah. It's been an interesting conversation, as it always is. I always appreciate it. And as this gubernatorial thing, I think if the announcement comes, it'll come before the end of the year. I think it would have to. We'll see where that goes.
Well, if I was still doing the McLaughlin Group, I'd say it's a good prediction. I can predict. He's probably going to do it, don't you think?
I'm at 70-30. I think we're going to... They just have nobody else. They need something. They need to make it an interesting election.
Right, they need something. See, that's it. Yeah, you need somebody with... cast a big shadow, even if it's not always a positive shadow.
I agree. Eleanor Cliff, one of my favorite people from the Daily Beast. Thank you, Eleanor.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. We are going to take a quick break. Come back with the Exchange Club right after this.
That is hard work, decorating your house for Christmas. And this old lady is not up to it. So I put around some old, very...